All right. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for accommodating the time change, and let's begin. So we find ourselves this week in Parshas Vayetze. So there are a number of incredibly dramatic and overwhelming episodes that unfold over the course of this week's parasha. There's, of course, Yaakov Avinu running away from home. I mean, he began the journey last week's parasha, but it ultimately continues this week. He then goes out, of course, makes his way to the house of Lavan, meets Rivka, meets Rachel, meets again the whole mishpacha, gets married. A lot happens. Marries. Four times, right? I mean, all at the same time. Baruch Hashem, four, right? Four marriages. Baruch Hashem has the total now of 11 children over the course of this week's parasha, begins his journey back to Eretz Canaan. But we're not going to do any of that tonight. Instead, what I'm going to draw your attention to is the very opening pasuk of the parasha. A pasuk that at first glance actually appears to be very undramatic, very regular, but as you're going to see, and what's part of the beauty of our Torah, is even the things that appear so simple and so ordinary have the most profound and depthful messages. Let's begin with number one. Vayetzi Yaakov mi-Be'er Sheva, vayelech Haran. Yaakov Avinu leaves the city of Be'er Sheva in order to go to Haran. Haran being the home of Lavan. So the obvious question when it comes to this pasuk, and many of the commentaries focus on this, is the pasuk appears to be unnecessary and redundant. Why? Because take a look at number two. The Torah tells us in number two, Vayishlach Yitzchak es Yaakov vayelech padana Aram. So remember again, the pasuk already told us in last week's parasha that Yitzchak sent Yaakov away and he went to Padan Aram. So already again, last week's parasha already told the Yaakov Avinu left. If we're told in last week's parasha the Yaakov Avinu left, then what? Then why the need to restate it again in this week's parasha? A simple question, a syntax question. We learned already that Yaakov left his father's home in last week's parasha. Why the need to open up again? Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, vayelech Haran. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, and he went to Haran. Why the need for the redundancy? Okay, so first of all, you have to understand something which you all know, which are there are no extra words in the Torah. There aren't extra verses in the Torah. And you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the most incredible teacher. You know, hopefully most of us have some good teachers in our past, right? Good memories of teachers. And the teachers who had the most profound impact upon us were usually those teachers who didn't spoon-feed us information. Those teachers usually are the boring ones, but rather they're the ones who, the inspiring teachers are the ones who encourage us to think, are the ones who often present us with information and encourage us to try to connect the various dots. The Ribono Shel Olam is the consummate teacher. So what he does in his Torah is that he makes statements, and you look at them and you say to yourself, why is this here? What am I to learn from this? And then it becomes our sacred mission to delve deeper and try to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to express to us. See, even an ordinary pasuk, like Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Haran, Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, his family's home, he goes to Haran, it's redundant, it's unnecessary, yet if it's here, it must teach us a lesson. And I want to show you two incredibly profound life lessons that come from this simple verse. Take a look at number three. So the first approach is the approach of the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi writes, Vayetze Yaakov mi-Be'er Sheva vayelech Haran. Od yesh lomar. This is so profound. Od yesh lomar. Dibichol adam hayotze mimakom lamakom. Yesh bazeh ofanim. In general, whenever people make change, basically, you know, part of the beauty of these parashios is the one thing that's consistent in all of these parashios is what? Change, right? The one thing that's consistent in life is change. The one thing that's most difficult to deal with in life is change. All right, good. You see where this is going. So, but understand the profundity of this. The Torah tells us about stories of people's change. The Torah, if you look at all of these stories, every single story, starting again really from Adam and Chava, we spoke about Adam and Chava in Gan Eden in this morning's shir. From Adam and Chava in Gan Eden getting expelled to Gan Eden and having to relocate, the Torah is filled with stories of people who undergo dramatic and sometimes traumatic life change. And the Torah tells us how these people manage change. Why? Because remember, the world is the same now as it was during times of Avraham Avinu or Adam HaRishon. Maybe technology has changed, obviously technology, a lot of, meaning accessories, life accessories have changed, but the human condition, the human dynamic is the same. It was as difficult for Adam HaRishon to deal with change as it is for us to deal with change. But we learn these stories because if we could see how great people dealt with change, maybe we could incorporate these strategies for us as well. So the Beis Halevi says something amazing. He says, people make change in all kinds of way. Adam hayotze mimakom lemakom. Sometimes a person changes their geographic orientation. I leave A, point A, city A, to go to city B. So ask the Beis Halevi, why do people relocate? Why do people relocate? And the Beis Halevi says so beautifully, people relocate for really two primarily different reasons. He says, O de iker tachliso, hi ha yitzia mimakom arishon, mishum ezo siba, ve'al kein muchrachu leilich lemakom acher, ve'al iker kavanasu uretzonu hiye yitzia. Let me read one more line. O mishum ditzarech lios bemakom hasheni, ve'zeu iker tachlis ha-kavanasu ba'halicha. So this is amazing. The Beis Halevi says that in life, we make change for one of two reasons. Usually, we're either running from something or we're running to something. You know, Rav Yisrael Meir Lau illustrates this concept. He says that the Navi Yeshaya compares Klal Yisrael to clouds and to doves. What's the difference between a cloud and a dove? I know that's a very open-ended question. What's the difference between a cloud and a dove? A cloud only moves when acted upon. A dove has the ability to take flight on its own. The Navi says to Klal Yisrael, you have an opportunity every single day to change your circumstances for the better. You have opportunities every single day to make your life holier, to make yourself a better person. So at some point in time, the circumstances of life push against us and force us to change. The goal in life is don't be a cloud, be a dove. The goal in life is don't move because the forces of nature are acting upon you. The goal in life is to be a dove and to spread your wings and to take flight of your own volition because you can. And the profundity of this is incredibly deep because all of us know that in our lives, I know the truth is I'm speaking to a group of women. You have nothing to change, right? But there may be men in your life who have much to change, so you could share this with them. Hey, we all have things in our lives that we have to change. We have elements of our personality that we have to change. We have aspects of our lifestyle that we have to change. We have things in our family that we have to change. We have things in our peer groups we have to change. We have things in our recreational activities we have to change. All of us have something we have to change. And the reality of life is, at some point in time, you're going to have to make the change. Because the way life works is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will create the circumstances that will back you into a corner. Your back will be up against the wall and you will have no choice but to make the change. What's the goal in life? The goal in life is to make the changes you need to make because you want to make them and not because you are forced to make them. The goal in life ultimately, again, is always to be the dove who takes flight on his own and never to be the cloud who is acted upon. Says the Beis Halevi something amazing. People make geographic changes for one of two reasons. Sometimes, I just say to myself, you know what? I need to get out of here. Why do I have to get out of here? Why? Because anywhere is better than here. I don't mean I'm happy to be here with you, but you understand what I mean? Meaning anywhere is better than here. We have circumstances in life, and they're bad. They're just bad. Sometimes they're relationship circumstances, sometimes they're career circumstances, sometimes they're personal circumstances. This life right here is not good. And so I need to get myself out of it. I have to extricate myself out of it. Where am I going? It doesn't really matter. As long as what? As long as it's not here. So there are some times in life when we take flight. The goal is to get away from my current circumstances. The destination is almost irrelevant. It just has to be somewhere different than here. And then there are other times in life when we take flight, right? We spread our wings, we flap our wings, and we take flight, and we have an intended destination. Where I am is fine. It's totally fine. But I could be somewhere better. And if I go ahead and find the courage to flap my wings, I could actually take my life to a different level. Says the Beis Halevi something absolutely amazing. If you look at number one, there are two different statements being made over here. Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er shava, vayelech charana. So what are the two statements being made over here? Vayetze Yaakov mi be'er shava means what? Yaakov leaves be'er shava. Why does he have to leave be'er shava? because his brother is ready to kill him. And that's not a metaphor. Right? His brother is literally ready to kill him. So he needs to leave home. He needs to leave home. Where is he going? Where in the beginning of the pasuk, it doesn't matter. Because Vayetzi Yaakov Mirshava means, I just need to get out of here. The second part of the pasuk is, lest you think that Yaakov Avinu is just trying to escape and has no intended destination, Vayelech Charana. Yaakov Avinu understands on some level that his destiny awaits him in Haran. His destiny awaits him with his mother's family. His destiny awaits him in this far-off land. But says the Beis Halevi, here in this simple pasuk, the Torah is teaching us such an incredible idea. Sometimes in life, you see, there are people like this who live their whole lives, and they're always running away. They don't know where they want to go. The only thing they know is what? I don't want to be here. So sometimes in life, if your circumstances are not good, you just have to extricate yourself from them and not worry about the destination. But you cannot spend a lifetime like that. Because if you spend a lifetime always running without an intended destination, then the problem is you get nowhere in life. And so there are people who are just chronically unhappy with their circumstances. This is not good. This is not good. This is not good. I have to change. And that's great. Change. Make changes. Change is the most wonderful gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. But do you know what powerful change is? Powerful change is not simply when Vayetz Yakum Be'er Sheva. Leaving your Be'er Sheva, that's not profound change. You know what profound change is? Vayetz Yakum Be'er Sheva and what? Vayelech Harana. Having a destination. You want to make change in life? Find the courage to make change. You want to flap your wings? You want to be the dove and not the cloud? Find the courage to take flight. But don't just spend your life running because you're not happy with your present. Figure out where you want to go. Figure out what your goal is, what your destination is. And this was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching us. You know, sometimes in life, it's right about this time of the year. Chodesh Kislev. What's often happening on a spiritual level this time of year? So it's getting cold. And it's right about now also where like the effects of Yamim Noraim have pretty much worn off. Right? Rosh Hashanah is done, Yom Kippur is done, Sukkot is done, Hoshana Rabbah, Shmini Atzeres. And it's interesting because for many of us, so I find myself now at like the same place that I was last year. I'm still a good person. I'm doing good things. But in terms of like moving my life forward, I'm not sure that I've actually moved my life forward within the last year. I've done good things. I've spent my time engaged in good things. But have I comprehensively moved my life forward? I have goals. I have aspirations. And for many times, it's actually a very sobering thought. But many times when the answer is no. So usually this engenders within us an incredible anxiety around Elul time. The good news about Jews is that we tend to have spiritual short-term memory. So I forget the anxiety of Elul. By the time I get to Kislev, I'm focused on Hanukkah. But why am I not advancing my life? Why am I not getting to where I want to be? Why am I not becoming the person I want to be? I don't mean checking off the things on your to-do list. You know, you can make a to-do list on Sunday and get through everything on your to-do list. It does not mean that you are a successful person. It might mean that you're an efficient person. You might be an accomplished person, but it doesn't make you a successful person. So why is it that sometimes we don't get real traction in life? Or the base level would say is because so often all we're doing is running away. But not running to. What am I running towards? So sometimes when we think about this, I know what I'm running towards, right? What is everyone running towards? Oh, come on. Shabbos. Right? I just need to get to Shabbos. Right? And if you're a kid, I just need to get to summer. And if you're working, I just need to get to vacation. Okay, it's great to get to Shabbos. It's great to get to vacation. That's not the question. Where am I running to in life? Where is my destination? Where is it? How do I know when I have arrived? How do I know when I've accomplished something? So says the Beis Halevi, life has to be comprised of these two elements. Vayetzi Yaakov Be'er Sheva, you have to have the courage to know that if your current circumstances are not good, you have to take flight and you have to get yourself out of it. So many of us allow ourselves to remain mired in mediocre circumstances and we don't find the courage to flap our wings and to get out. Get out of your mediocrity. but you could be flying around, not know where to go. Therefore, vayelech harona. Find the courage to take flight from your present mediocrity, but just as important, know what your destination is. Know where you are flying to. And I think what the Beis Levi is teaching us, you know, this doesn't just mean like a destination for life. You know, sometimes you hear that question and it's very overwhelming. Where am I going to in life? I don't know where I'm going to in life. I'm literally just trying to keep my head above water day to day. So you don't necessarily have to answer that like for a lifetime, but where are you going this year? Where are you going this year? What would you like to see yourself accomplish over the next couple of years? What's your life plan? What's your charon? Don't spend your life just leaving Be'er Sheva. Try to figure out ultimately what your destination is. That's the first lesson. Take a look at number four. Number four is just, actually, you know what? Go to number five. We're going to look at four and five together at the same time. So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh understands these psukim in an exceptionally mystical way. So again, the Beis Halevi, and you understand, by the way, I'm assuming it's only because we started the shiur 15 minutes later that there is I was like expecting an incredible gasp after this Beis Halevi, right? This is amazing. This is life-altering. This is absolutely like riveting, and it's in one simple pasuk. Do you realize how profound it is to have a Torah that gives us the entire playbook for life? One little pasuk, Vayetz Yakum Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Harona. Find the courage to take flight from your circumstances of mediocrity, but figure out what your destination is. One little pasuk, the secret for successful living, one little verse. The Aruch Chaim, number five, understands it differently. He says, 5 Aleph, Ubederech Remes Kol HaParsha, Tirmos Inyan HaAdam. So the Aruch Chaim understands this pasuk differently. The Aruch Chaim understands this, quoting the Zohar, in a very mystical fashion. What's the mystical fashion? And this is actually quite riveting. He says as follows. Ukimoshe eschilu lomar bazer azal, vayetze Yaakov, hi hanefesh. The Aruch Chaim says that this entire section of the Torah is telling us the story of Yaakov. But remember again, whenever the Torah tells us stories, the first question you always have to ask yourself is what? What's the lesson? Because the Torah is not a storybook. So if there is a story, the story has a deeper embedded message. So ask the Aruch Chaim, why do I need all of the details of Yaakov Avinu's departure from Be'er Sheva? And by the way, it's all of the details. We'll take a look at number four. We have every single detail of his departure. We know about his departure. We know about where he slept. We know about his dream, the conversation during the dream, the reaction to the dream, the continuation of the journey after the dream. So the Aruch Chaim Kadosh, why do I need all of these? Why do I need all this information? See, he says it's a metaphor. The story of Yaakov Avinu is a metaphor for the journey of the soul. Look what he writes. He says, "V'nikra Yaakov al shema yetzahara hakaruch ba'akavav." So listen to this. Says the Aruch Chaim Kadosh, "Vayetze Yaakov." Yaakov, he says, is a reference to the soul. Now Yaakov, the literal etymological meaning of Yaakov means what? The heel, right? The reference to the fact that Yaakov was grabbing onto Esav's heel when they were born. So the Aruch Chaim says that the Zohar writes that from the time that we're born, the Yetzirah is always at our heel. Now what's the imagery there? What is the Yetzirah is always at my heel? You see, I just want to keep going higher, higher. But there are always these forces that pull me down. They're always pulling my head. Now, I mentioned this before, but I want to say it again. You know, when we speak about the Yetzirah, so don't confuse this with the Christian concept of the evil inclination or of Satan, right? We don't believe like in this guy in a red suit with a pitchfork who stands on my shoulder, whispers in my ear, tries to get me to do all these terrible things. When we speak about the Yetzirah, that represents the internal self-sabotaging mechanisms that HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed us with. You ever have an experience in life where you wanted to accomplish something and you didn't do it and you get all upset? And of course, the first reaction is what? You get upset at who? Oh, so women, you're very introspective, right? But again, most people, right, usually get upset at someone else, right? It's this one's fault. And then, okay, then when I take a step back, I say, you know what? Actually, no one else did this to me. I did this to myself. And I realized I pulled the rug out from under me. I sabotaged myself. I did stupid things. I made stupid decisions, wrong calls. And again, it was clear. I'm not talking about those situations in life where like you thought it was the right decision, then it turns out we all have situations like that. I mean, situations where I look at my life and I say, I clearly sabotaged myself. That's the Yetzer Hara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed us with these self-sabotaging mechanisms. These internal, why? Because growth is only meaningful if you have to overcome your own internal self-sabotaging mechanisms. If there's no internal self-sabotaging mechanism, then growth is easy. So therefore, says the Arachaim something amazing. Vayetze Yaakov. Yaakov comes out. Where is Yaakov coming from? Yaakov means the neshama, the soul. Why is the soul called Yaakov? Because the soul comes into this world, and from the moment it comes into this world, Vayetze means it leaves the celestial sphere. The moment it leaves the celestial sphere and comes into this world, the Yetzahara is tugging at my heel. There are constantly forces acting upon me, internal forces, to bring me down, to prevent my ascent. So I'm not going to get through all of this because the Arachaim is quite lengthy. You'll look at it on your own. But you'll see what the Arachaim does is he takes every part of the narrative in number 4 and understands it metaphorically to be referring to the journey of the soul. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er-Sheva means when the soul leaves Be'er-Sheva, he understands as a reference to the celestial sphere. It comes to the celestial sphere, Vayelech Harana. Harana, he understands also as a reference to the womb. It comes out from the celestial sphere, comes to the mother, and then is birthed into the world. And he goes into every story. Vayikach, look at paragraph Beis. I'll just show you a couple of snippets of it. Paragraph Beis. Vayikach me'avne ha'makom. So what does Yaakov do when he wants to go to sleep? So what does he do? He takes from the stones and he surrounds his head to protect his head. Writes the Arachayim. What are the stones? Those represent the mitzvos and Torah. What does the soul do with the mitzvos and Torah? Surrounds its head. Sometimes the body goes through a lot in this world. The head has to always remain pure. The hashkafas, the ideas, the outlook, the mindset always has to be surrounded by the stones of Torah. And he goes on and on and on. But so now that's the Arachaim. The Arachaim's approach is this entire narrative, all of number 4, is all a metaphor for the soul's descent into this world. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er-Sheva is the soul leaving the celestial sphere, Vayelech Harana, coming into its mother's womb, and then ultimately exiting into the world. All of the difficulties, the trials, travails that the soul encounters in this world, and how the soul bolsters itself. Remember again, how does the message conclude? What does Yaakov see? He sees a dream. And what's his dream? His dream is he sees a ladder. How does the Torah describe the ladder? The sulam is mutzav arza. It's implanted on the ground, but it reaches to the heavens. The angel is going up and down, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu is sitting on top of the ladder. What's the metaphor? See, when the soul leaves the celestial sphere, the soul is broken. The soul is broken. Do you know the time Amen Hagim brings down? That's one of the reasons that we have a Shalom Zachar. Why do we have a Shalom Zachar? Because we like chickpeas. I'm saying, why do I have a Shalom Zachar? So time Amen Hagim says something amazing. A Shalom Zachar is Nichum Avelim. It's coming to comfort the mourner. Who's the mourner? The mourner is the baby. The baby is in a state of existential, spiritual stress, sadness, and tragedy. Because the baby, just a little while before, was in utero. In utero, the baby was learning Torah with a malach, learning Torah with an angel. Before that, the baby was in the celestial sphere. Now the baby's here. Again, the spread at the Shalom Zachar, I'm sure, is fantastic. But the baby doesn't want to be here. We come to be Menachem Aval. We come to tell the baby, it's going to be okay. Look at us. It's going to be all right. Look how we turned out. Hey, so I guess you have to be careful who you invite to the Shalom Zachar. But the idea is something so profound. The baby is distressed because the baby's in this world. What's Yaakov's dream? And the dream is there's a ladder. What does a ladder do? A ladder connects points A and B. So Yaakov is by the base of the ladder. God is on the top of the ladder. The message being soul. Even though you are Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva, even though you have left the celestial sphere, you have not lost your connection. Your connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always intact. Your connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always vibrant, always, always spectacular. Obviously, it changes when we're up there and when we're here. But that connection is always present. Comes along the Lubavitcher Rebbe, number 6. And he says something absolutely amazing. Look by paragraph Aleph. So he also quotes the Arachayim. Look in paragraph Aleph. Dine mevor ba'arachayim, shekola parsha deveyetzi akum be'er-sheva, miramezes liyiridas hanasham mimkar chotzva, leislabish besoch guf kashmi v'chomer, shimigram al-biram mikta. So he quotes the Arachayim. The Arachayim understands the entire narrative of Yaakov Avinu, ultimately to be the metaphorical story of the descent of the soul from the celestial sphere to the mundane of this world. Look what the Rebbe writes. Umavur b'Torah sachasidus sheyirid azu hitzorach aliyah. This, by the way, is one of the tenets of Chasidus and one of the concepts that the Lubavitch Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha writes about incredibly frequently. The concept of Yerida Litzorech Aliyah, which means that in life, sometimes you have to go down in order to come up. So what does that mean? Look at the left-hand paragraph. Shedavka Ayidei Shana Shama Yoredes Lislabish Baguf Va'osekes Imo Levaro Lizakko Hine Ayidei Ze Ola Hanashama Lidargo Salyonos. You know, if you think about this, you know, the million-dollar question that we often ask ourselves is, what's our goal in life? What's the goal? I know, you're thinking, you stop answering life questions after 7 p.m., right? Nothing, right? We would think, like, in a general sense, our goal is Gan Eden, right? Our goal is Olam Haba, even though, again, we're a very life-centric religion, a life-affirming religion. But at the end of the day, the Mishnah says, this world is a corridor to the world to come. So our goal is live meaningfully and impactfully in this world, so that I have a lichtige Gan Eden. I have a beautiful world to come. I have a beautiful portion in the afterlife, an eternity of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. See, isn't this the incredible irony? If that's my goal, then God, I have a counter-proposal. What's my counter-proposal? What's the counter-proposal? Don't send me down in the first place. In other words, I have a counter-offer. If you're sending me down to this world, where it's filled with tests and challenges and all kinds of difficulties, my goal is to get back right where I started, so I'm going to save you time and effort, God, and a lot of anxiety from watching me make a ton of mistakes. Just go ahead and don't send me down. Just let me stay with you. If the goal is to get back to you, so then why do we have this entire 120-year circuitous journey? To which the Rebbe says something amazing. Because we have an ability to accomplish things in this world that allow our soul to go back even holier and more pristine than when it first descended into this world. Do you understand the profundity of that statement? You see, we often think that our goal is to do what? Is to return our soul back to God in what? It's kind of like the mashal I like to give is like when you return your leased car, right? What do you have to do when you return a lease, right? What you hope is that the scratches are not so noticeable, right? I got to return the car so that if you're standing like 15 feet away, it looks new. That's my goal. We think it's the same thing with my soul. After 100, what's my goal? God, I'm going to get it to you at least like the fender is still on, right? In ours, that there's some scratches, there's some paint missing, there's a couple in it, but the truth is, just look at it like this, you know, and it looks totally fine. So the Lubavitch Rebbe says something, no, that's not our goal. The soul comes down pure and pristine, and we have the ability to return it even purer and holier. Through our actions in this world, we actually make the soul holier than what it was when it first came down. He goes on. This is absolutely amazing. So the Rebbe says, but how does that happen? How does that happen? And get ready for this. How does that occur? How do you make a soul that comes from the essence of purity? Remember again, where does the soul come from? Where does the soul come from? The soul comes, is chiseled from underneath the throne of God, the essence of everything holy in this universe. So how can I take something that is chiseled from underneath the throne of God and make it holier than when it started? How do you do that? To which the Rebbe says something amazing. You know how you do it? You rebound from failure. When you fall and you fail in life and you pick yourself back up and you dust yourself off, and you learn from your mistakes, and you become greater as a result of your failure, holier as a result, not despite your failure, but holier as a result of your failure. I learned my weaknesses. I learned my deficiencies. I understand the areas that I have to work on. Excuse me. And now, I'm going to go ahead and become better. I grow as a result of my failure. That's how the soul becomes holier. That soul of someone who failed and grew not despite the failure, but as a result of failure, that soul becomes holier than when it first came down to this world. And right there is something amazing. And this is part of the bracha that God gives to Yaakov. Shedavka kesheyagiu zaracha laafar haaretz. Sheteirat haneshama laafar haaretz. Lalos gam es hadargos hachi tachtonos. Hariu zoche lebirchas uparatza yama vekeima letzavana. So listen to this. Go back to number 4 for just a moment. If you look at number 4, in verse 14. So this is in the middle of the dream. God is communicating with Yaakov. He's giving him a bracha. And what's the bracha that he gives him? Your offspring will be like the dust, literally like the dust of the earth. You'll extend in every single generation. And again, everyone will be blessed as a result of you. What's the problem with this blessing? What's the problem? Has this blessing ever come true? No. Is there an anticipation this blessing is going to come true? Nowhere, it's very interesting, because Baruch Hu promises Yaakov, your children will be like the dust of the earth. We are, what percentage of the population are we in this country? What percentage of the population are we of humanity? A decimal point, right? Nothing. So where's the bracha? And even the Messianic era. Remember again, you know the Gemara says, when Mashiach comes, we don't accept converts. The doors of conversion are closed when Mashiach comes. Why? Because then there's no challenge anymore. Everyone wants to be part of the winning team. Right? So we don't accept converts in the Messianic era. So there's never a destiny for the Jewish people to become like the dust of the earth. So the Bav Shebe says, what does that mean? And he interprets it so dramatically differently. He says that it's dafka, v'hayo zaracha ke'afar ha'aretz. It is dafka when your offspring are in the dirt of the earth. And they pick themselves up. And they dust themselves off. And they grow as a result of their adversity. That is when they will experience the greatest amount of blessing. The greatest amount of blessing in life, the greatest amount of holiness in life, never comes from your successes. It always comes from your adversity. This is the deep, dark secret that none of us really like to acknowledge. Real life growth never comes from success. Real life growth never comes from bracha. Real life growth comes from tragedy, from loss, from adversity, and from setback. It is only when your offspring are in the dirt, when they're down and out, because life has just dealt them an incredibly difficult hand, and they choose to get back up, that is when their soul becomes holier than when it first descended into this world. So what the Rebbe is saying is something absolutely amazing. He's building on the Aruch Chaim's message. The Aruch Chaim has this incredible metaphor that the entire story of Yaakov Avinu's dream, the entire story of Yaakov, is a metaphor for the descent of the soul into this world. And for the Aruch Chaim, the story ends at an incredible apex, an incredible zenith, which is what? The ladder. The ladder is the best part of the metaphor. Because what does the ladder tell us? That there's connection. Don't think that because beautiful neshama, you're no longer in the celestial sphere, that you don't have a relationship with your God. Not true. The ladder connects heaven and earth. That connection is always there with our God. It's different. The relationship is different when the soul is here than when it's in the celestial sphere. But the relationship is always there. Says the Bab Chabin, no. There's an additional message. The additional message is, not only is there still a connection, but the whole reason a soul comes down to this world is why? To become better than it was when it was first chiseled out from underneath the throne of God. You'll say, craziness. How could a soul become better after being in this world than it was when it was first chiseled out? Because a soul that has been chiseled out from underneath the throne of God has not been vested with the holiness and the growth that only comes from the dust, that only comes from setback, that only comes from tragedy, that only comes from difficulty. Those are the things that a soul could only experience in this world. And those are the things that are the very fuel for soulful growth. And therefore, after 120, when we all experience our own difficulties, our own setbacks, our own failures, if we find the ability to grow from them, to lift ourselves up, then we give not just the soul back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with hopefully some unrecognizable dents and dings and scratches, but we actually have the ability to give God a soul that is even holier than the one he sent down 120 years earlier. And this is exceptionally dramatic, exceptionally amazing of what the Torah is teaching us. But I want to build on this just for the few moments we have left together. There is, the Lubavitcher Rebbe adds in one more piece. Not on this parsha, but in terms of this idea that the goal in life is to grow from your adversity. The goal in life, ultimately, again, is to grow from challenge. The goal is, and this is so important, we don't grow despite our failures and adversity, but rather we grow as a result of our failures and adversity. So failure and adversity could take on a variety of different forms. It could be in the form of tragic loss. It could be in the form of a moral lapse, a moral failure. It could be just in a variety of setbacks. But I think that there's an element of failure that is very often common to all of us. Take a look at number 7. This, to me, is one of the most dramatic pieces by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He says a little bit of a story. Number 7. This is a story from Malachim Beis. Look what the Navi says. We're just going to read the first couple of psukim. V'isha achas minishei b'nei hanavim. There was a woman who was a wife of a prophet. She was a prophet's wife. Shaka el Elisha. She cries out to the prophet Elisha and she says, Avdecha ishi meis. Your servant, my husband, died. So this woman was unfortunately a widow. Her husband passed away. And you know that your servant, my husband, feared God, and he left us destitute. He died. We have no money in the house. And we have no money, but he left us with incredible debt. And now the debt collector is coming. She has two sons, the debt collector is threatening to seize my children in satisfaction of the debt. So this woman is coming to the prophet Elisha. Who is this woman, by the way? Interestingly enough, the commentaries identify her as the wife of the prophet Ovadia. Right? So Ovadia was one of the major prophets. So Ovadia was a prophet during the times of King Ahav. King Ahav was killing the prophets. He was killing out Nevi'im. Ovadia hid hundreds of prophets in a cave and was solely responsible for feeding them each and every day. Ovadia dies and he leaves behind a destitute family. His wife comes to Elisha. Just, you have to help me out. I don't know what to do. I have no money. I have nothing. And literally, I'm about to lose my children. So we know this story. Vayomer le Elisha ma'eselach, hagidili, ma'yesh lach babayis. So Elisha says to her, okay, let me see what I could do. What do you have in the house? What do you have in the house? Vatomer ein l'shif chaseich kol babayis ki im asuch shemen. She says, I have nothing in the house. The only thing I have is what? A little jug of oil. This is not a Hanukkah story, right? A little jug of oil. Vayomer lechi sha'ali lech kelim in achutz, meis kol shechinayich, kelim rekim al tamiti, ubasa v'sagarta adalas v'adeich u'ba'ad banach v'atzakta kol akilim ha'ela v'amali tasi. And what does he tell her? Go to your neighbors. Gather up as many empty utensils as you can. Bring them into your house. Close the door. Draw the blinds. Don't let anyone in. And what should you do? And he says, start pouring the oil. And we know the story. What happens? A miracle occurs. The oil keeps pouring. She fills up utensil after utensil after utensil. When does the oil stop? When she runs out of jugs, right? When she runs out of utensils, ultimately, again, that's when the oil stops. Vahi kimlos hakelim, vatomer el binah gisha elai od keli, vayomer le ein od keli, vayamot hashemen. Once the lady says to her son, give me, quick, pass me another utensil. She says, Mom, we have no more utensils. The oil stops. She tells Elisha what happened. Elisha says, wonderful. Go sell the oil, use the proceeds to pay off your debt, and you're going to have more than enough money to go ahead and support your family as well. An incredibly beautiful and dramatic story. Comes along the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and Dez, I know we're doing a lot of Lubavitcher Rebbe tonight, but it's absolutely incredible. Look what he writes in number 8. So this, by the way, just as an aside, interestingly enough, amongst the Rebbes of Chabad, is very often they said the same exact Torah discourses, one generation to the next, Rebbe after Rebbe, just each Rebbe kind of adding on his own little something to it. This is perhaps one of the most famous Chabad Torah discourses. Listen to this. So the Rebbe understands this in a dramatically different way. He says, look at paragraph 2. He says, V'isha achas min eshei b'nei ha-nevi'im, tzak elisha. So tonight is a night of metaphors. He says, listen to this. He says, who is this? Isha achas min eshei b'nei ha-nevi'im. The Rebbe says, this is a reference to the soul. A reference to the neshama. Tzaka el Elisha, right? So who's Elisha? So Isha achas mibnei ha-neviim. So that's the soul. The soul was called from amongst the children of prophets, representing the idea that the soul came close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from God, communicated with God. The soul is called the offspring of the prophets. So the soul comes along. And who does the soul call out to? Tzaka el Elisha. Who is Elisha, says the Rebbe? Who is Elisha? Elisha is God. Right? In fact, again, if you look at the name Elisha, Eli, my God, Shah. Shah means turn to me or answer me. So the soul cries out to God. What does the soul cry out to God? Get ready for this. What does the soul cry out to God? You don't have to choose. We'll do it outside. Take a look at number 7. So what does the soul cry out to God? Look back at number 7, Pasuk Aleph. So Vaisha Achas Minishe B'nei Anavim. So one Isha, one woman, one soul that came from the heavens cries out to God, Leimor, Avdecha Ishi Meis. What is Avdecha Ishi Meis? Avdecha, my servant. Ishi, we translate as what? My husband. Ishi could also be translated as what? My fire. Ish. Ish Shelly. My ish. My fire has died. What is the neshama saying to God? I'm no longer inspired. My fire is dead. My fire is dead. You know, when I was in the heavens, I was all into this. When it was in the heavens, I was all charged. You sent me down to this world. And Avdecha Ishi Meis. My fire has been extinguished. I feel spiritually dead. This is the soul speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what happens? Va'ata yadata. You know God. Ki Avdecha Haya Yareas Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know that I was once inspired. You know that I was once good. You understand what's happening over here? This is the story of the human condition. The soul is in Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know that I was the kid who came to the table with all the parsha questions. Right? I was the kid who said the 75 million midrashim on every single pasuk in Parsha Sashavua. I was the one who read, even though no one understood what I was saying, but everybody smiled and nodded because they were so proud of me. I was that kid. I was alive. I was passionate. I was excited. And now what happened? My fire is extinguished. My fire is dead. Not only that, v'hanosheba, the creditor is coming. Who's the creditor? Who's the creditor? The creditor is life. The creditor is life. Life has come. Lakachas eshnei yiladai lo la'avadin. You know, life has a way of sapping you of your vitality. Because you know what happens? We all know what happens. Right? We go ahead and we're young, and we're idealistic, and we're optimistic, and we're excited. And then what happens? Then what happens? We hit 17, and like it's a downward spiral from there, right? Because what happens, and again, it's sad, but these ages, it wasn't used to be 17, it used to be like 30, right? Where before you got jaded. Now, already again, because when you're 17, you know everything in today's day and age, you become cynical, sarcastic, jaded, judgmental. Life has taken everything from me. Now, I don't mean tragedy right now. I just mean like life. Just the way I live, the way I conduct myself, my attitude, my disposition, my fire is gone. The avanosha, the creditor of life, bala kachas eshnei yeladai, is taking everything from me. Sapped me of all my vitality. I'm sarcastic. I'm jaded. I no longer have my optimism. I've given up on myself. I've given up on my marriage. I've given up on people. I've given up on everything. I've resigned myself to living a fireless life. So what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu say to the soul? Vayomer le Elisha, ma'as alach. So God says, this is amazing. What does God say? What do you want from me? Right? What do I want from you? You're God. You're God. I want a lot from you. So God says, okay. Hagidi la mayesh lach babayis. So God says, tell me, what do you have in your home? In other words, what does Kadosh Baruch Hu say to the soul? You can't be totally dead. You can't be totally extinguished. Tell me what you have. Tell me something redeeming about yourself. Tell me something positive you do have going for you. And what does the soul respond? The soul says, Vatomer, Ein l'shif chaseich kol babayis. So the first response is the soul says, God, I got nothing. I'm telling you, the fire is out, I'm uninspired, nothing's going on in my spiritual life. And then I think again, the soul thinks again, and then it says, Ki emasuch shemen. I do have something. What do I have? I have a little bit of oil. What does a little bit of oil represent? So this does take a little bit into Hanukkah story. What does a little bit of oil represent? A little bit left of vitality. I have a little bit fuel left in me. You're right. I mean, it was a little bit hyperbolic in my response. The fire is not totally extinguished. There's a little something still alive in me. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Vayomer lechi sha'ali lach kelim min hachutz. Me'is kol shechinayich kelim reikim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, so what should you do? What do you want you to do, soul? Go get empty utensils. And here the Lubavitch Rebbe says something amazing. What are empty utensils? Get ready for this. He says empty utensils is Torah and mitzvos with absolutely no kavana and no passion. Go get empty utensils. And the Rebbe then goes on, but that's where, what is this? What is Hashem Baruch Hu telling the Neshama? The Neshama is telling God, God, I'm uninspired. I'm uninspired. My fire is extinguished. I'm going through the motions. I'm doing what I have to do, but I'm just not feeling it inside. What should I do? And God says, what do you have? You have anything left in you? No. Dead. Nothing. Okay. There's a tiny little bit of oil. That's all. What does Hashem Baruch Hu say? Fine. What I need you to do is accumulate empty utensils. And here lies something amazing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, sometimes to awaken the fire of inspiration and spirituality, you have to engage in sustained, unspiritual activity. You see, one of the great misunderstandings we have about Yiddishkeit is that we have this notion that we are supposed to be perpetually inspired. Right? Everything is about inspiration. And if I'm not inspired, then what? Then what? I have to find a different shul. If I'm not inspired, or the shul should get a different rabbi. Right? If I'm not inspired, then it's this. If I'm not inspired, my kid's not inspired, the teacher's not doing their job. Where do we come up with this idea that Judaism is perpetual inspiration? So I'll tell you where I think a lot of it came from. A lot of it came from the fact that ultimately, again, you know, we are living, already now we're used to it, it's not as new, but in the last generation, unprecedented Baal Tshuva movement. And the way that many people come back to Yiddishkeit is not through mundane Judaism, through inspired Judaism. And that movement brought with it a revitalization of inspired Judaism. But it has also sparked, I think, an erroneous mindset that Judaism is always supposed to be inspirational. Judaism is a relationship. Judaism is a relationship. Do you know, even in a good marriage, my wife is here, so I have to be very careful with this. Right? Even in the best of marriages, you don't feel blissfully, overwhelmingly in love like the day of your chuppah throughout your marriage. You don't, and anyone who tells you they do is lying. It's simply not true. Now, you could be in love, should always be in love with your spouse, and that love should always be there. But do I feel on a Wednesday like I felt under my chuppah? I mean, I do, of course, but other people, right? Hey, of course not. Of course not. Because, and marriage, and there are times when there's friction in a marriage, and the truth is, I'm not even sure I like you, let alone love you. But yet what? What do you do in that moment? When, let's say, there's tension, what do you do in that moment where, again, it's not blissful, it's not chuppah-like? What do? You disengage? So there are people who do that. And if you disengage when things are not going well, you're not going to have a marriage for too much longer. Because what makes a relationship something meaningful is consistent engagement even when you don't feel it. Is consistent engagement even when it's not blissful. And consistent engagement even when it's not Sheva Brachos. Consistent engagement even when you're not feeling it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Neshama something dramatically amazing. You're uninspired. I got it. Your fire has burnt out. So Neshama, what are we going to do with this? What is the Neshama waiting for? What do you think the Neshama is waiting for? The Neshama was waiting for, like, okay, so you're going to invite me to the celestial Shabbaton, right? We're going to get this, I'm going to have a Shalashudis and a Havdalah. We're going to strum the guitar. It's going to be fantastic. Chazal Baruch Hu says, no, there's no Shabbaton. There's no Shabbaton. You know what there is? There's consistent work. Gather the empty utensils. Do mitzvos. But I don't feel it. Okay, that's all right. A lot of times in life, the way you sustain relationships are through uninspired activities. There are a lot of things that people don't feel like doing in a marriage. But if you want a successful marriage, you do it anyway, and you do it with a smile, and you even pretend like it's great and like it's wonderful, because that's what relationships take. Relationships are not always shavar brachas, chuppas, and inspiration. Relationships are hard, sustained work, even in uninspired times. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the neshama, you want your fire back? Empty utensils. Learn Torah. Oh, but I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it. Okay, learn it anyway. Do mitzvos, but it doesn't do anything for me. Keep doing it, and one day it will do something for me. You know, the great secret to inspiration is that the path to inspiration is paved with days and weeks and months and sometimes years of uninspired activity. You don't become inspired just like that. You don't become inspired by engaging in inspirational activity. You become inspired by engaging in sustained, sometimes uninspirational activity, sticking with it, keeping going. What do? You take your oil, and you begin to pour it. You put yourself into that empty utensil, and then something amazing happens. What happens? You fill up this utensil, and what do you suddenly find? You have more oil. You have more energy, you have more ability, you have more desire, and as time goes on, you become more and more vested, more and more excited, until the fire ultimately again is rekindled. The path to inspiration is paved with sustained, uninspired activity. Sometimes you just have to keep plugging away. And I know it's not a very attractive message, because the truth is we are instant gratification people. I want it to be fun now. I want it to be uplifting now. I want it to be inspirational now. Okay, you show me something in life that works that way. I don't believe anything that's meaningful actually works that way. Most things that are meaningful in life require uninspired, sustained activity to get to a moment of kindled inspiration. And so if we bring this all together, it turns out that this is what the narrative is teaching us. So ultimately, again, what happens? And this is really amazing, because so the Arachayim is telling us that the entire episode of Yaakov Avinu is a metaphor for this journey of the soul. And the Arachayim understands it to mean what? The Arachayim understands it to mean that the soul comes down, Vayitzak, Beersheva, Vayelech Haran, all different parts of the journey of the soul. The apex, the zenith, the ladder. Even though you're separate from God, the relationship is still there. Lubavitch Rebbe takes it a step further. Not only that, but Yaakov, when does the soul truly become great? V'hayah ki zaracha ke'afar ha'aretz. When you fail and you rebound, that's when you become greater. But I want to tell you something amazing. Where does Yaakov have this incredible vision? When does it all occur? What is Yaakov doing? Sleeping. Yaakov Avinu is sleeping. Because sometimes in life we are spiritually asleep. Sometimes in life the fire has gone out. And so what do you do when your fire has gone out? Well, what does Yaakov do after the dream? What does he do? You know what he does? He walks. He journeys. He continues on to the great unknown, to Haran, ultimately again continuing his path of simple everyday activity with the hope. Remember, what does Yaakov Avinu say? Yaakov Avinu has one wish: bring me back to Eretz Yisrael. Bring me back home. And if you bring me back home, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you'll be my God. Yaakov Avinu understands that at the end of the day, the path ahead is going to be difficult. And the truth is, may probably be very uninspirational. But the pledge that Yaakov Avinu makes is that even when I am uninspired, even when my inner fire is dead, I will continue to fill the empty vessels. I will continue to do what you ask of me. I will continue to go ahead and learn your Torah, do your mitzvot, even if I don't feel it. Because I know that if I continue to fill the empty vessels, then at the end of the day, at some point in time, the fire will be rekindled. This is the struggle of our generation. You know, our struggle now is no longer observance. It used to be that the struggle for the Jew was to be frum, was to be a Shabbos, Shomer Shabbos. That's no longer our struggle. Today you can be Shomer, I speak of that often. Today you can be Shomer Shabbos. You can do whatever you want. It's incredible times that we live in. You could choose any career you want under the sun, and you could be an observant Jew. That's no longer the challenge. So what's our challenge? Our challenge is that for many of us, the fire has gone out. I do what I have to do. I'm not at risk. I'm not going off the derech. I'm going to keep plugging away at it. But the fire has gone out. How do you rekindle your fire? Says Rebbe like Yaakov Avinu. You wake yourself up from the slumber and you continue forward. You continue the empty vessels of Torah and Tefillah, even though, again, those acts may themselves be uninspirational. But you keep putting a little bit of your oil inside of them, with the hope that if you continue to fill the empty vessels, one day, some way, somehow, the fire of inspiration will be reignited. All right, we'll stop over for tonight.